Good morning, everybody. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, and usually this is the time when I tell you how much I enjoy my Harvest Ridge coffee, but Chris Turner is here in studio with us, and Chris, you have a little unpaid announcement you'd like to make about Harvest Ridge, please?
Man, so amazed. Harvest Ridge, the best coffee I've tasted.
Very good. He needs a cup of coffee. Boy, you school teachers keep late hours. My day's almost over, and you're just getting started.
Yes,
I want
ma'am.
Your job. I want your job, Chris Turner. We're going to talk to Chris Turner and to Addison Archie in just a moment. But right now, we are going to focus our attention on the principal of the Quincy Junior High School, Brenda Fleer. Not a new face, either is Chris, to the Mary Griffith Show. So glad to have you here again.
Thank
Welcome.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about a story that was in the news this morning, and it is that teachers surveyed across the state of Illinois say the teaching shortage is getting better. It still exists, but it's not as bad as it was at one time. As someone who is an administrator, tell us a little bit about what the teaching situation is at Quincy Junior High. I know you're not at full staff.
Correct.
But how far off the mark are you?
Well, we've been fortunate to have a grant, which we're able to hire teachers. So we have what we call teacher residents. So we're able to hire teachers who have degrees in, it could be in other areas, and we hire them as full-time teachers as they're getting their degree.
Okay.
So that is really how we've been able to be, you know, fully staffed for the last probably 4 or 5 years.
Because the math and science teachers are and special ed are probably the most in demand, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Special ed for sure. Right now, we do have some ELA openings.
And you have to English language arts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to speak
yes.
teacher.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I still want to translate
yes,
for those.
English language arts. I would just say it's just kind of hit and miss. Just depends on, you know, if we've had long-term teachers for quite a while, you know, sometimes we've had 30-year veterans who've then left, and then that leaves openings and maybe we just have not had any graduates in that time. Special ed is always, you know, needed for sure. Math and science are definitely, you know, those areas that are needed. I just think it's everywhere. Teachers are, you know, I listen to podcasts all of the time, and it's just an area where there's a lot of people just not going into it any longer. It's a difficult career to go into, and sometimes when you're not well respected, and it's a very, very difficult job, that's hard to you know, go into that field.
Let's talk about that, Brenda Fleer, because I personally know at least a half a dozen people who are former special education. I don't know if that's the correct term for mm-hmm. it anymore, but special education teachers, and they told me that after about 3 years, they were so completely burned out, they just left the profession. They didn't switch to another classroom. They just left the profession and are doing something else. And I guess what I'm asking you is, as somebody who's down there on the ground, if it's that difficult to be a special ed teacher, if it's that unrewarding, I think very big-hearted people go into that because they want to help special children. They want to make everybody feel loved, everybody feel accepted. The heart of those people is massive and huge that want to take on that task. And then we kind of beat them down. The system kind of makes it after 3 years, they're turning tail. So something's wrong. We're not blaming you, certainly, but I mean, mm-hmm. something's wrong. What are we going to do to fix this? Because we see so many teachers that thought they wanted to be teachers their whole life, and then after 3, 4, 5, 7 years, they're like, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be all about little kids or all about this 15-year-old exploring the life, and it's about just parents yelling at me and not making enough money and not feeling appreciated. So something's wrong.
Well, I definitely think it's multifaceted. I think that You know, we definitely have to take a look at the entire system. You know, special ed, there's a whole different piece to it. You know, there's
right.
a lot of paperwork. So there's a different look at that.
Nobody ever said I want to be a teacher because I want to do a lot of paperwork.
Right, right. And so, you know, I think it depends on your outlook on things. You know, there's a lot that goes into teaching. I was an English teacher for 18 years. And so, you know, there's planning that goes into that. There is grading that goes into that. Getting up at 4 a.m. and grading papers is something I did. You know, you're planning on the weekends. You're staying after school. So it's not a, it is definitely not something that you go to work from 7:30 to 3:30 and you go home like a lot of people think.
People think the minute that the school bell rings and you walk in, and then the school bell rings in the afternoon and you walk out, and then nothing could be farther from the truth.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, are there people that do that? Sure.
How could they?
In any business, you know, there are people that are really good at their jobs, and there's some that aren't so good, you know, and that's the same in education. But really good teachers can't do that.
Right. So you have had experience in the classroom. You are administration now, and you're back in the classroom because of a shortage. Is it helpful in a way? I know it's probably annoying because you still have to do all of your other administrative duties too, but is it helpful in a way to always go back every once in a while to see, things have changed?
Oh, absolutely. This is my second time around. I also taught an eighth grade class a few years ago. And I do think it's, you know, if it weren't for all of the other stuff of running a building of 175 staff and 1,400 kids and doing all the other things, it is pure joy for me to go back, and my scholars that are in that classroom are really, that's the highlight of my day. It really is. But it is also really nice to know, like, this is, you know, when a teacher talks about something, I know exactly what they're talking about. I can relate. I've always been somebody that discusses, you know, and likes to talk about, you know, if I'm going to talk the talk, I like to walk the walk. And so being able to do that, that's very important to me. And so, you know, what I did 18 years ago, I can still talk about doing that today. And I, you know, when we have PLC on Wednesdays, I meet with the other two teachers that I work with. So that's very important to me. I meet with them. We work together. We talk about our unit. We do all of those things. So I do exactly what I would expect my other teachers to do.
Junior high is an interesting mix. You've got 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Quincy's finally back into, quote, the normal high
yes.
school and junior high
yes.
configuration. For years,
yes.
our 9th graders were stuck away from the rest of the high school, yet their grades counted for their high school graduation. So I think that has been an improvement. You
Absolutely.
Probably agree that that's
Absolutely.
An improvement.
Absolutely.
Some people say, but the 6th graders are so little. But it's the way our configuration is. That's the school that can hold that number of students, and that's the way Quincy has configured. But lest people think that the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are just all jumbled in there together, because that's a big range of emotional and physical and academic development, there still are some guardrails to keep the 6th graders, the 7th graders, and the 8th graders somewhat insulated from each other.
Yes, we have teams, and so we like to talk about, you know, like smaller learning communities. So each of our grade levels is by floor. We also have teams, so each of our teams is divided up in, our grade levels are divided up into three different teams, so they're smaller learning communities. And so that, you know, we can wrap around each team has a certain amount of teachers and a certain amount of students. And so we can wrap around that 150 kids, 140 kids. And they only see really, for the most part, those teachers with the electives and the PE teachers. And so it's really nice for parents just to be able to focus on those teachers rather than when I first started, you know, a student could go from the 4th floor to the 2nd floor to the 1st floor back to the 3rd floor. And it was, you know, everywhere, all over. And so that's really, really nice. The team of teachers meet every single day to talk about, you know, get professional development. They are meeting with the deans and counselors. They are talking about, you know, kids in the sense of how can we help and wrap around kids who need support academically, behaviorally, social, emotionally. So all of those pieces are there and are there to really help support students.
I don't want to take away from our other guests who are here, so I want to ask you some quick rapid-fire questions. Academically, I volunteer in the second grade, and I know how important second grade is because, you know, if you're not getting those learning skills, if you're not fluent or getting fluent in second grade, it's going to get increasingly harder. What happens to kids when they arrive at the Quincy Junior High door in sixth grade and they're behind? How do you intervene and help them catch up? And it's harder to catch up in the sixth grade than it is to catch up in the second grade.
Correct. So we work really, really hard to put interventions into place. We have things like Focus DLA, which is a reading intervention. We have math enrichment, which is a math intervention. I would say that we're hoping to see less and less of that as our curriculum gets stronger and our reading gets stronger at the lower levels. However, we have some things in place. We're strengthening those as well. Do we have more kids that need more? Absolutely. But it gets tougher and tougher. And we just work, you know, as hard as we can to help those students.
You're kind of like a buyer of a used car. They open the door and the sixth graders come in, and you've got to accept what Rooney and Lincoln Douglas and Isles and all the others gave you, and hopefully there's a curriculum that is, you know, uniform and kids are performing. But let's face it, there wouldn't be average if there wasn't somebody above and somebody below.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's
We've always had that since
time began. But the idea is to get them as comfortable as they can and start them on that process where they're going to be taxpayers in our community. They're going to go on to Quincy High. I know this I'm going to be a Blue Devil thing is really big. It's big for the Rooney Foxes. It's big for the Quincy Junior High Comets. You know, I'm going to be a Blue Devil. I'm going to graduate as a Blue Devil. Is that working?
Well, we're always looking to help, you know, start something to help Jody Steinke and his team, because it starts way before him, and so that
he really gets a double use car.
Yeah, because that's a piece that, you know, it doesn't graduation rates aren't on him. You know, it starts way before him, and so that's something that we talk about a lot is what can we do
if the tires were bald.
Yes,
it's not his problem, but he's got to put new tires on the car or patch what he's got.
Absolutely. So we started something this year where we were talking about MAP testing and really how can we get MAP testing where kids really not only just buy in, but really see it as something that's important for them and really talk about growth and how important that is. And so, you know, we really hyped it up. We made hype videos. We did all kinds of things and really just talked about why, you know, this is important. And all we want to see is you doing your very, very best. We actually saw more growth than we've ever seen at all in probably the history of doing MAP testing. And so that was really exciting, and we're hoping to continue that into the spring as well. So, we just ask our kids just to give us your very, very best. And we did some incentives as well. And so every time they were able to make their own growth goal, because it's all about their own growth, we gave them a ticket, and then they were able to, our PTO was really great. We had some awesome prizes, and then they were able to put it into a prize that they thought that they wanted to maybe put their ticket in. And, they gave us their best.
That is fantastic. Well, we'll close with this before we let you take a lesser seat. The last time you were here, you brought a therapy dog with
you.
Is therapy dog still on the prowl?
Oh, Bunny is there. Bunny is there. And Bunny is like really the superstar of our school. Absolutely. I mean, really, I told Chris, who's here today with us, that, I wasn't sure if Chris was going to be the superstar today or not because, you know, there is Bunny, but he's a close second. He's a close second.
Bunny didn't endorse Harvest Ridge, so Bunny won't be invited back as much as Chris is, that's for sure.
There you go.
You know, you have the, to me, I've never had children, but to me you have the most difficult, in a sense, job because the sixth graders, many of them are still little kids. And then the eighth graders are trying to be adults but aren't quite there yet. And you've got all the raging hormones and everything. I guess it's good in a way we put them all in one place and watch them. Junior high was probably invented for that very reason. What are we going to do with all these kids, you know?
They're my favorite.
Yeah.
They are the best. And, you know, it does take a special, but I think it takes a special group of people to teach every single age. And
I couldn't do, you know, the little ones. Yeah, I'm much more in tune with the Bitsy.
Yeah.
However, I took four kids from first grade through graduation at Quincy High as a mentor, four different kids, and there is something to be said about seeing the finished product.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, and seeing
but
that
these middle
successful.
Schoolers, and I think that's what's so cool is that, and I think you're going to see that when you talk to Chris and Addison,
mm-hmm.
and just the influence that we can still have on these kids and really what our programs and what we're trying to do at Quincy Junior High School, I think is really, really incredible. So I'm gonna turn it over to them because it's so awesome.
We're going to take a break. And for everybody who says you never talk about anything good, the news is always bad. Boy, have we got good news for you if you'll just stay tuned. It's 9:36. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We're going to step aside, head up to the IRSA Farmers Cooperative. Keep listening because we're going to tell you about the League of Women Voters May oral debate tonight as well. So stay tuned. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. It is my sheer delight to introduce to you a young woman named Addison Archie, who's part of the Young Women's Initiative at the Quincy Junior High School. And she is joined by her teacher and coach, Chris Turner, who's been a guest on the Mary Griffith Show before. So first, let's learn a little bit about Addison Archie. Addison, tell us how old you are, what grade you're in, who your parents are, and anything else we need to know about you, please.
Hello, hello. My name is Addison Archie. I am 14 years old. I go to Quincy Junior High School. I'm in eighth grade. Parents, Erica Shaw, Austin Archie. That's really it.
Okay, 14 years old.
14.
Let's talk a little bit about this group that you are in, YWI. And Chris Turner, if there's anything you need to clarify, you just hop right in there. Because, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Yeah, so I am Christopher Turner, district liaison. I work at the junior high. Started the Young Man Initiative program that we spoke about when I was last on the show. And now we are extremely delighted to bring the Young Woman Initiative to Quincy Junior High School. I am here to just support Addie and her wonderful self so while she talks about what we do at school.
Okay, so let's talk about the Young Women's Initiative. What is it?
Young Women's Initiative is just a group to better yourself, find validation, figure out, get in line of what you want to do, figure out how to stay out of trouble because some females and guys struggle with it. Just find yourself, really, or start that process.
Were you one of those students who maybe had trouble getting in trouble?
I definitely was.
You were. Okay.
Yes.
So this is fascinating. I'll put on my psychiatrist hat here. So you were a young lady, 12, 13 years old. You knew the rules. You knew the expectations of school, but maybe you weren't always making wise choices. Obviously, this was offered to you as a chance to turn yourself around. So, having been 14 once myself, it really can't come from an outside source. They can offer you the option, but you have to make the first step forward to say, I'm willing to change. So what was it in your mind that the Young Women's Initiative offered you that, you know, hanging out and popping your bubble gum or whatever was bad at junior high, that you decided to make a better choice?
I decided to join because realizing that Chris actually wanted something good for me made me strive for better, made me want to do better, realize that I had people actually looking up to me and thinking I could do good, and it wasn't just me figuring out what I want to do or thinking, oh, I'm right here, I'm going to stay right here.
That is so critical. Having somebody believe in you, mm-hmm. especially, and I'm a Quincy native myself. Are you a Quincy native?
I am.
Okay. So here's what happens. Your last name, your address, maybe what your siblings did. These are all factors, who your parents are. These are all factors that kind of pin you sometimes mm-hmm. into this box. And they say, well, you know, that's the Griffith girl.
Right.
She lives there. She does this. She won't amount to much more than this because it's almost like India. That's the social caste in which you belong. So, you know, whatever the expectations are, it's the expectations that you will fit in this box.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people today don't want to fit in a box. They want to be recognized as an individual. And this young man, Chris Turner, who I always joke looks like one of the kids of the junior high, he's so youthful looking, but very wise. How do you get them to believe you when you say, I really do care about you?
So first, I want to say Addison's always going to be hard on herself because we talk about accountability, but she was not that bad.
I know.
We have students that struggle with decision-making. She was not one of those in that sense. But I will say we talk a lot at junior high about being innovative and looking towards the future. And I think you said it best with the caste system. Here in Quincy, because of strict demographics that really we can't control, you do find yourself trying to see where that destination leads to. And there's so many things that students do, youth do, that end up destroying or burning that bridge down before they get to see the other side. So we want to show them China. So we started this program to give them that destination. So the Young Man Initiative and Young Woman Initiative is based on mirrors, and we really focus on that. We bring in professionals, minority professionals that look like these students, that sound like them, but also have very similar frames of reference and some of the same things they struggle with as far as the caste system. So they see that, and then they understand that if they work and they focus and they put energy into things that suit them as opposed to the toxic things that we can get caught up in, and we can go into social media, but we won't right now. But they avoid those things, and then they see that destination. So then the adversity of falling and scratching your leg or missing your travel or not having enough gas, it all makes sense because I've seen what it leads to. So every month we have a topic, whether we talk about, for the young lady specifically, it's validation from within. It is knowing and learning your own identity. It's about having integrity and building a brand for yourself or self-advocation. And then we bring in professionals that align with those topics every month to be a keynote speaker or a mirror for those students.
That is fantastic. You know, it happens to white folk, too.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriends who's very, very successful, and she was asked a lot to come and talk to disadvantaged youth, most of them white kids from her old neighborhood,
absolutely
disadvantaged youth. And she said, I'm not getting through to them because I come in my business suit and they see me, the successful woman I am today. And she finally realized, I have to let them know I was you. I was sitting right where you were, and nobody thought a poor girl, mm-hmm, woman, mm-hmm, could do anything. Nobody thought I could rise above my caste system. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought this could happen to me. It's hard to see a role model, too, sometimes. They may look like you, but how do you get there?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
then you
yeah.
find out, but I had some of the same struggles you're going to have. Everybody has different struggles. So what are some of the things, like, what do you want to do, and what is it that you feel like this Young Women's Initiative is going to help you do? Because first you got to get good grades at junior high, get good grades at high school, decide what you want to be, quote, when you grow up. So how does that look for you, Addison?
Definitely just being a role model, not being somebody that they look at you and they think, oh, she's this, oh, she's that. Like, I want to be a role model for the 6th, the 7th, all the kids, because when you're an adult trying to speak to a kid, it's definitely hard to reach them, if you know. And, like, I'm a kid, and I can relate to them more than they think that I do. And I really just want to just help and let them know that they're not alone. They have someone to talk to. But for myself, I just really just want to get good grades, graduate, and just be myself, be successful, and start life the right way.
And what does that look like for you? Like right now, I'm not expecting you to declare a college major right here on the Mary Griffith Show, but, you know, you probably have dreams and aspirations. I mean, what are some of those things? What would success look like for you?
Definitely find a good college, graduate, get a great job, start a family, just be myself, really.
The American dream.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with you being a woman or being of color or it's the same dream. It's the same dream we all have.
Right.
But some people feel there's a barrier there.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. My brother moved away when he was 18 from Quincy. I've lived here pretty much all my whole life. And he's fascinated when he comes back. Everybody's like, where do you live? Who are your parents?
Yep.
Nobody in Dallas, Texas has ever asked my brother who his parents are. Nobody has ever asked my brother, where do you live? In general, like to try to pin him, you know, what socioeconomic class are you from? They may say, where do you live as in, you know, how far away did you have to come to get to this event or something? But it's not like, oh, high hollows. You're not of a manner born, are you? But in Quincy, we are kind of trapped by that. You're trapped in every town that you're born and raised in. Because I've struggled with that, thinking, oh, do I belong here?
Yeah.
Do I belong in my neighborhood? I certainly didn't belong there when I was a kid, that's for darn sure, but why should I let that limit me? So we put limitations on ourselves a lot, don't we? You're finding that out, that, yeah, people will always put limitations on you. Mm-hmm. Trust me, as a woman, right. I'm going to tell you, it's never going to ever go completely away, okay? I had red hair when I was younger. You talk about being a freak. You know, there were no redheads, you know, people always say Jewish people can hide, but black people can't hide. Redheads can't hide either. You know, we can't pretend not to be a redhead.
But there's beauty in being unique.
Yeah,
I think one thing that you said that we talk about a lot, me and Brenda, is as educators, it is our responsibility to kind of humanize ourselves to kids. And when we do that, when we show that we also have things that we work through and we also have to build resilience as adults, it makes that connection a little more genuine. And one of the things that Addison does really well, but we also do every month in a group, is we set goals. So our goals go beyond our barriers, and a lot of our goals go beyond some of those things that we're trying to be pinned into when it comes to boxes, and it helps them really focus. I mean, my connection with the students is something that I take a lot of pride in, but it's also, we talk about building those connections with other adults, because with those boxes you talk about, we also have some stigmas attached to school and education. We have some barriers and obstacles that are a lot deeper and a lot longer than we have time to talk about right now. But as humans, we want to come to the table and really work on trying to fix that. Every kid that comes into junior high wants the approval of their peers.
Right.
Actually, I would argue every adult at junior high wants the approval of their peers.
Everybody wants their peers. It's how you go about getting it. Choosing your peer group that's key. And some kids just make a bad choice really about who they're hanging around with.
Absolutely.
But that can be solved. And they can also be that influencer that gets the whole group acting the right way instead of the whole group acting the wrong way.
Absolutely.
And we know that groups sometimes behave inappropriately that they wouldn't have done on their own. So that's really critical. So this is a very comprehensive program, and you have to be invited, I'm sure, to join this. And so how many people are in this Young Women's Initiative?
I think we have about 35, 40.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, so we have 35 young ladies in the Young Women's Initiative. The Young Men Initiative has about 65 young men. It started off, both of them are pilot programs. Both of them started off very small, but we have found that it's huge, it's important, and it's impactful. So,
do parents support it?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
And is part of the problem, like, we okay, our parents are, I guess, our first and primary role models, but sometimes that doesn't always work, and we need more. We need the whole village. So having other people to look up to, because now both my parents were college educated. In our house, it was never, where are you going to colleges? Or, you know, are you going to colleges? Where are you going to college?
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you don't have, and it's no strike against the parents, if they can't be the one to take you on the college visit or have no idea how to do this, you know, you have to step up. And you have to say, Chris Turner, it's possible for you to go to college, even though nobody else in your family did. It's possible for you as a woman to be a doctor, even though it was not that too long ago that when the little kids went on the field trip to Blessing, the little boys were all doctors and the little girls were all nurses. And finally somebody said, this is whack. Mm-hmm. You know, we shouldn't be putting them in those gender-specific roles at four on a preschool visit. We should be letting young ladies know they can be absolutely anything they want to be.
Absolutely.
Which I look at you and think, when I was 14, trust me, that was not the case. Nobody was doing what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. Not a soul. And now it's a very female-dominated profession in many respects. So things change, and you can be part of that change. So what do you want to be when you grow up? You say you want to go to college. Do you want to be a veterinarian? Do you want to be a psychologist? Please say you want to be a radio talk show host so I can retire and you can take my job.
Being in group has just made me realize that I actually want to speak to children and reach out to them, if I'm being honest. Because seeing all the guest speakers, being invited to the boys' guest speaker, seeing Chris make a change, I genuinely want to do that.
You might be a teacher.
I might be a teacher
coming up through the ranks. Most people who go into teaching had a very influential teacher in their life. So you've got some really good people that you are surrounding yourself. If the folks out there that are listening that are taxpayers of not only Quincy Public Schools, but other public school districts, private schools that spend a lot of money on the emotional and social part, it's like, just teach them to read and write. Don't worry about the emotional, social. As a 14-year-old, how important is it that somebody listens to you in addition to trying to get you to write a thesis on Shakespeare?
It's definitely so important because a lot of females and males do not feel like they have a voice. They don't feel like they're being heard whenever they open their mouth. And being a part of group, you can be very vulnerable. Open up to whatever you need to open up about, and everybody will sit there and listen until you're doing a good job, and then we'll move on about our day.
And one of the best things, I'm sure, is finding out you're not alone.
Exactly.
A lot of people have the same insecurities. A lot of people have the same confidences. Yes. There's always something that is turning, and you're always learning something new. Well, you've been delightful. You brought the star. You're better than Bunny, because Bunny wouldn't talk to me. So Addison, Archie, you come back anytime. I really wish you the best. Go to the University of Illinois. That's all I can wish for you. And, you know, I think it's great. And Chris, we'll give you the last word. How important is it that the Quincy School District invest time and money in this? Because you could have 100 kids, boys and girls, who are in danger of maybe falling below that radar screen and just not showing up. And that's the end of them, and we don't ever hear about them until Mary Griffith reads their name in a police blotter report.
No, that's a very true statement, and I think the impact that this program has had on the students that are in it, I think, is undeniable. There is a lot of the pieces that we could sit here and talk about as far as students need to be regulated. They need to feel trust and safety for learning to happen. If you want that thesis to be done, that student has to have some sort of a real vivid connection with that person. Programs like these allow students to be, become, and belong, and that's what everybody wants. I think there is a socioeconomical element to it. I don't think it spans any race or gender. I think it's more about just creating those mirrors instead of windows. And I think the more we do that, the more we start to cultivate a culture that makes everybody feel welcome. And then all of the academic stuff you're talking about just flows. So it's important. Yeah. It's extremely important.
Remember, Black folk, people in North Dakota, there's somebody who's discriminated against there too. It's not because they're Black. They figure out some reason you're different, and they'll always find a way to try to put you in a box. don't let them do it. Thank you so very much for coming.
Thank you,
Brenda Fleer, for supporting the program. Thank you, Chris Turner, for being an advocate for
the
program.
Thank you.
And thank you, Addison Archie, for agreeing to be in the program.
No problem.
And keep drinking that Harvest Ridge coffee.
You got it.